Experience. We are live today is Sunday, June 13th, 2021. It's 4:30-ish p.m. Central. I'm Matt Delaney. Joining me this week, Vice Rhino. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I am recovering. I've got miscellaneous announcements to get to, and then we'll chit-chat and start taking calls. But thank you to everybody who's tuned in. If you're watching us live on YouTube right now, you'll notice that down below the chat, there's a donation link. You can donate directly there. All that money goes directly to us, doesn't pass go or Google doesn't collect their $200 or anything like that. But that's one of the best ways that you can support the channel. There's a number of other ways to support the channel, including merchandise, which if you go to bit.ly/AENmerch, you can find there your mouse pads and coffee cups and t-shirts and whatever else. Supplies may not match exactly what I just said. You can also become a member here at YouTube. There's a link available there for 99 cents a month. You'll get custom emotes and icon thing like that. And at patreon.com/theatheistexperience is another one. But if you're really just looking for community and you want to interact, there are two Facebook groups that we've been promoting. There's the Atheist Experience fan group and the Atheist Experience private fan group. The URLs are listed there on the screen grabs to show you there. And in addition to this program, the Atheist Experience Network, or AEN, is growing and growing, and it is where you will find all of the programs put out by the Atheist Community of Austin. You can go to tiny.cc/AENpodcasts. That's your one-stop destination for all of our shows as audio-only podcasts. So if you're normally watching Atheist Experience, but you aren't familiar with the other shows, go over and check it out. You've got Talk Heathen, Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, etc. They're all out there. And in between, on Sundays, Talk Heathen airs at 1 o'clock and Atheist Experiences at 4:30. But in between those, you'll find new episodes of The Nonprofits recorded on Wednesday with all new people and all new thoughts and all that stuff there. It's just it's really easy to find all the stuff, and it's getting easier. Updating the website and doing a bunch of other stuff. People will keep asking, hey, when are you guys going back to the building? And the answer is, we'll tell you. We're not completely sure yet. There's a lot of things to do. I want to do a couple quick updates. The first is, the only reason that Vice and I are able to be here and do all this is because of the people working behind the scenes. This group of our crew on the crew cam there, they are screening calls and working on video and working on audio and trying to fix all the things. And as usual, something gets broken almost every week for like just a minute, and then boom, like I can't do it. It's too much. I've been building up the studio down the end of the hall, and as soon as there was a tech issue, I was like, oh, that's it, I quit. But we got it sorted. Last thing to update about is there was a mass shooting in Austin, Texas over the weekend, and I appreciate all the people reaching out. There were no fatalities. I think there were 13 people who were injured. It took place down on 6th Street, which is, I mean, that's just Partyville every weekend. We still don't have details on who did it or what the motivation was or anything else. But I will say that to the best of my knowledge, no one from the ACA was injured at all, and there were no fatalities. So things could have been much, much worse. And I just wanted to thank everybody for their well wishes and concerns and people who reached out. And I was sitting in my recliner with an upset stomach, just watching dumb shit on YouTube. And all of a sudden I started getting messages saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And yes, I am okay. I had no idea what they were talking about. But Vice Rhino, tell everybody who you are, where they can find you. I know the mods have information and there's links in chat, but welcome.
Yeah, thanks. So yeah, I have a YouTube channel where I deal mostly with young earth creationism, but I also tackle some other apologetics and the existence of God. I recently put out a video where I conclusively disprove God's existence. At least one very specific iteration of God. So that was fun. That actually got much better reception than I was expecting. Normally, when you put a lot of work into a video, nobody likes it, nobody watches it. But that one actually seems to have struck a chord with people. I also release my videos as a podcast. You can find me using any typical podcast search. Search for Vice Rhino, it'll pop up. But yeah, so that's a lot of fun. Now, I hear that. Now, I'm excited to be here because when I started my channel, I didn't. If you'd have told me that one day I would be hosting the Atheist Experience with Matt Dillahunty, I wouldn't have believed you. But then, if you'd have told me that I would be hosting Matt's 500th episode, that would have taken me completely by surprise. And I hear the crew has something ready to go to celebrate this special event.
Okay.
It appears that you've reached the 500th show. Let's hope you get the hang of it soon, hey? I'll never forget the first time I saw you on AXP. I'll keep trying, though. You've changed so much over that time. Please keep changing until you find a look that we can tolerate. You know, you've taught me so much. If it weren't for you, I'd never have learned how to fast-forward YouTube videos or how to mute my headset.
Nice.
You really deserve so much from us, but we will hold our tongues for the sake of courtesy. Congratulations on making it through 16 years and 500 shows. But if you keep mouthing off to me in crew chat, in all seriousness, congratulations and thank you for all that you've done and continue to do for the atheist community all around the world. You are very, very much appreciated.
Hey everybody, Objectively Dan here, and I'm here to roast Matt for his 500th episode of Atheist Experience. Just to give you an idea of how long Matt has been doing this show, the very first episode of Matt Dillahunty on Atheist Experience premiered when I was in fourth grade. I don't know why Matt chooses the site Radiocarbon Dating to know that the Earth is over 6,000 years old when he could just be using his birth certificate. You could probably hang up on a telemarketer once a day, every day for the rest of your life, and still not hang up as many times as Matt has hung up on people on the show. And you know, if I'm really thinking about it, Matt might be the only person that's been featured on public access television that has yet to have a Tim and Eric sketch based off of him. But the truth is, I probably wouldn't be here, and a lot of people at the Atheist Committee of Austin wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Matt's tireless contributions to the atheist community. So, Matt, thank you.
Hey, Matt, I know I'm supposed to be making fun of you and we're doing a roast or whatever, but I started to feel really guilty because you've been so generous with your time coming on and appearing on Secular Sexuality and helping us to get the word out about that show. And then I realized that you being on a sex show is actually better than any joke I could write. So, here we are.
Amen.
All right, everybody's talking about this. The viewers are talking about this. People on your Twitch channel are talking about it. People on my Twitch channel are talking about it. And quite frankly, I'm sick of you dodging me because you know that I can destroy your career because you cannot possibly refute this. But now that I have you pinned down and you're stuck and you have to come up with an answer, I don't think you can refute this, so I'll just give it to you right now. You ready? You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Pawn to e4.
So I was asked to roast my insufferable know-it-all boyfriend, Matt Dillahunty. And I got to tell you guys, it's not difficult to roast Matt because have you seen how pale he is? I can confirm that he uses sunblock rated for vampires just to turn on his studio lights, which I can also confirm is 20. Honey, maybe get out of your lair a little more often and stop eating trolls for lunch because I know they're satisfying for you, but they're without substance. Love you. Keep being awesome.
I'm not saying that Matt's a god, like I don't believe in God. But in many ways, Matt is like the great prophet, you know, come to rescue humankind. And for that reason, and because I am allegiant to this idea, I have founded Dillahuntyism. Now, if you want to join me, my fellow Dillahuntyists, you must take communion. Instead of communion wine, we have Coke Zero. Always keep that on tap. I don't have any actual communion wafers. I do have some Triscuits and a little cookie butter or peanut butter on there. Maybe some almond butter jelly for communion. Our communions have a little flair. We have a special sign that it's a hand signal you start here and then you go down. And this is like symbolic of hanging up on the people during the hang up and the atheist experience. I know he just uses the finger, but this doesn't feel like a good group sign, like a good signal. I think you start here and then you go down, right? And then you say, Dillahunty, right? And then you say to me, Dillahunty. And to show you my allegiance to this new religion, as soon as I'm done with this greeting, I'm going down to the barber shop and I'm going full Dillahunty. I honor you, great prophet, and I commit to you my lifelong allegiance. Salute and Dillahunty.
Wow. I can't thank you guys enough. That was hilarious. And what one of the things that's extra funny for me is Penn wasn't kidding. There's no way he remembers me from the handful of times we've been in the same place. I love that somebody said, "Hey Penn, you want to say something about Matt? Who's that?" Because he did that to me with a friend of mine too. But yeah. Oh wow, thank you guys so much. I don't know for sure if I can commit to another 500 episodes, but we're not quitting today. And I will try to remember to Dillahunty hang up on whatever. Hey, you guys,
Are the kids going to understand that, like what that means nowadays?
I hope so. And at the end, though, I mean, if all we can do is you know, joke about how old I am and how long I've been doing it, I'll take that. I'll take that. Anyway, thank you guys so much. I had no idea it was 500 episodes. I knew it was something in that vicinity, but damn it, we've got callers we need to get to. There are people who are waiting to be to ask Feist Rhino questions and stuff. You ready?
Oh, specifically for me, eh?
Well, I don't know if they're all for you, but we're going to do what we can. I should be able to take today off after 500 episodes, you'd think. But all right, let's try Ulrich in Germany. You're on with Feist Rhino and Matt. How are you?
Hello.
How are you? Oh God, what have I done? I feel so woefully unprepared.
Well, we're not prepared either. I mean, I don't know how you can be worried that you're unprepared. We didn't even know you were calling or what you were calling about. So you should definitely have an advantage.
Yeah. Well, I was calling about, I'm a great fan of yours. I've been listening to hundreds of your shows, your YouTube videos, and that's why
we'll fix that.
Call in and tell you, hello?
No, I'm sorry. I'm in a jokey mood because I just got, roasted. So I just said, we'll fix that after you said you were a fan, but go ahead, get to your point. I'll stop interrupting.
Yes. That's what I wanted to explain to you, what I've been doing wrong all these years and tell you how to do your job, and you're welcome in advance.
Thank you.
Now, I was calling in about, because you make this argument that, because I'm an atheist, and you make this argument that the theists have the burden of proof, whereas the atheists only have to basically point out a lack of evidence. You make this argument about the court case scenario, where the prosecutor has to prove guilt, but the defense attorney only has to prove lack of evidence of guilt, not innocence. But the problem I have with that is, even though technically the defense attorney can get their client off, they may have still ruined their life, because in the court of public opinion, they might still be considered as the guy who might have gotten away with murder or something. And that's why, even though you, as the defense attorney, you can pat yourself on the shoulder and say you've gotten your client off, you might have not have done enough, and maybe disproving, proving innocence, i.e. disproving God, is the better way to go than just pointing out that there's lack of evidence for God.
Okay, so I'm gonna say a couple things real quick, and then I'm gonna let Vice take it because he just did this. Hang on. I don't disagree with you that it would be better to prove that God doesn't exist. The problem is, if the proposition is unfalsifiable, that's not possible. The burden of proof is always on the individual making a claim, whether it is claiming God exists or claiming God doesn't exist. And if you claim God doesn't exist, you've adopted a burden of proof, and you may or may not be able to meet it. So you can go with the courtroom analogy and say, oh, well, if you didn't prove your innocence, people might still think you're guilty. Yes, that's true. Tough shit. That's the way of reality. If you're not able to prove you're innocent, You just have to deal with that. But I'll advise to it because he can prove God doesn't exist.
Yeah. So, yeah, I kind of agree. Like, there are so many different God claims out there that to take on the burden of proof and say, no, I am going to prove that no God exists, is like every time, every God you disprove, someone's going to come up and be like, oh, well, what about this one? You'll spend your entire life making arguments about that. So what I recently did was I generally focus on Christianity and the Christian God, specifically young earth creationism, who they have a penchant for taking the Bible more literally than it probably should be taken. Than it definitely should be taken. But so I actually made a video where I went through and I compared, like, okay, this is what the Bible says about who God is, and this is what else the Bible says about who God is, and these two things are incompatible. They're direct opposites. So, like, it says God is love, and then it defines love as being patient and kind and does not boast and is not jealous. And then it says God's name is jealous. He's so jealous that he personally identifies with the quality of jealousy, and that is his name. But love is not jealous, and God is love. So, it, like, just from that, the video is 43 minutes long. I went through a whole bunch of examples of that, and I had to cut it off short because there was just so many more. Like, I didn't even touch on Deuteronomy 28, which read the second part of that, like the second two thirds of that chapter sometime, and tell me that the God who proclaimed that was loving. But in general, if somebody says I have a God, it's like, okay, that's nice, convince me that your God exists, give me what you've got. And if, like, at the end of the day, if their arguments just are not convincing to you, then they have not met their burden of proof with you. And this is another thing, is that the what will convince you is going to be different from person to person. And but you, like, you, nobody has the time to spend their entire lives seeking to disprove all these different God claims. So it should be enough to just say, like, okay, well, try and convince me. If you don't bring anything new to the table that I haven't heard a million times before, then I'm just going to remain at my default position of I don't accept your claim.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Ulrich, what do you do if the God that somebody's talking about is one that you can't disprove?
Well, the question is, I mean, when you make the claim of a supreme God, that one you can't actually disprove, because that's actually a negative claim. That's basically the claim that there is a God who doesn't have a God himself. I mean, basically,
maybe this is a language issue, but it seems that's a really curious way of defining, to say there's a supreme God is a God that doesn't have a God. But mm-hmm. I think what you're describing is the greatest being possible. But how do you prove that God doesn't exist?
Well, for instance, every third caller, somebody calls in and says something can have possibly come from nothing, therefore God. I mean, you've had these calls. And what you usually do is you say, how do you know that? Which is cool, Socratic method, I'm down with that. But
you're not down with that, because I just asked you how you could disprove a particular God. And instead of giving me an answer, you're talking about people calling in to say that something can't come from nothing. I don't care what other people say. I don't care how people are defending their God. You seem to think that you can disprove a maximal God. And I've just wondered how you did it.
Yeah, I'm getting to that. Okay, people ask that, and you say, how do you know something can come from nothing? Whereas I would simply go, what about the entirety of everything? Because what is there other than everything? By definition, there is nothing.
No, but your response isn't a response to the question. If somebody says something can't come from nothing, for you to say, what about the entirety of everything? First of all, that's not saying, how do you explain everything? Is you asking a question, that's you using the Socratic method. It's not you disproving anything at all. And secondly, if somebody says something can't come from nothing, and you say, what about everything? And what if they just say that didn't come from nothing? You would then have to prove that everything did come from nothing in order to be a counter to their argument.
Well, if something is really everything, then there is by definition nothing else. So no matter what everything is it finite, is it infinite, is it eternal, does it have a beginning or an end, does it contain one, zero, or many gods, it doesn't matter. Whatever everything is, it can't have come from anything.
How do you know that?
And that's what I mean. Because if there were anything else, then everything wouldn't have been everything, by the definition of everything.
I don't think your concept of what you are able to disprove is quite as strong as you think it is.
Really?
If somebody, so first of all, What I asked was, how do you disprove the supreme God? And instead, you decided to try to disprove the claim that something can't come from nothing, which is not necessarily the same as there is a God above all others. So you're not even disproving the thing that I asked about, the thing that you said you could disprove. But if I say, if I put my theist hat on and just say something can't come from nothing, and you just say, what about everything? You haven't responded to the argument. You haven't addressed it. You haven't produced anything remotely edifying to show how something could come from nothing.
But everything altogether, everything in existence is something, isn't it?
That's just playing semantics.
But where did it come from?
Therefore, something.
Where did everything come from?
It can't have come from anything, because there is, by definition, nothing other than everything.
No.
That's just playing semantics, though, I think. Like, isn't that just, like, the response to that is, like, okay, everything that's not God was made by God. And then what was there before everything? There was God. God was the only thing. So that's part, like, it is now part of everything, and he made everything else. Like, this objection seems to be specific to the cosmological argument, which is the, how did everything begin sort of argument. I guess the Kalam version of that, where the everything that begins to exist has a cause sort of thing. But like, there are much better objections to the cosmological argument than just saying, well, everything definitionally is everything, and so like, what is there that's not part of everything? It seems like
your response is, when they say something can't come from nothing, and your response is basically to just assert that everything has always existed in some form or another, and that's fine, and I suspect that you may be right, but that's not a proof, and it's not an argument, and it's not evidence, and it's not a rebuttal to their position. It's just another assertion.
Well, I didn't say anything about the nature of everything. We don't know what everything is. Just if it's everything, then it can't come from anything. But it's not a...
No. You did just say something about the nature of everything by saying that the person is wrong to say that something can't come from nothing.
Yeah, because everything can't have come from anything.
How do you know that?
Because that's how everything is defined.
No, you don't get to define this away just like they don't get to define it into existence.
This is a complex cosmological question that break out theoretical physical models of the early universe to figure it out. Like, you can't just appeal to a modern English definition to explain what happened in the pre-Big Bang universe.
Yeah. If we don't have an explanation for why there's something rather than nothing, and there are plenty of candidates, either at some, there was never nothing, there couldn't be a nothing, or there was something else and it changed form or whatever, we don't have this explanation. And so it would be a mistake for us to assert that we do, just as it is for the theists to assert that they do. It's just go with, I don't know, and you'll be fine. Your frustration over not being able to disprove something is one that we share. But if the fact is something is unfalsifiable, if a proposition is unfalsifiable, claiming to have falsified it is as big a mistake as anything any theist has ever done.
Well,
I got to move on. I appreciate the call. Yep. Cheers. We're going to get on to some other calls here. Muhammad in California, you're on the show with Vice Rhino and Matt. How are you?
Hi. How are you, Matt? Vice?
We're doing well.
Yeah. Thank you guys for the opportunity. Matt, I learned from you a lot. Like, you know, I look up to you and stuff. I know, like, you're going to say, like, oh, don't look up to me too much. Like, I just mean, like, I learned a lot from you, you know? So, like, I appreciate that.
I'm glad. Thanks. How can we help?
Okay, so I was on Truth Wanted, like, not too long ago. And I told Dan and the other one with him, I think his name was Matthew. I told them that I'm not, like, convinced of Islam anymore. But, you know, like, I like the criteria that, like, you guys like say that, you know, like in terms of like knowledge, like you don't know if like a God exists or not, but in terms of like belief, like you could either, you know, believe that the theistic worldview or not, like you only have those two options. So,
okay.
Me, like by default. Yeah. Like me by default, you know, I'm just like gonna like believe in the theistic worldview.
Why would you do that by default?
You know, like, I just like, because, like you were saying, like, there's only, like two options, either like you believe by default isn't a god until like sufficient evidence.
No. What I'm saying is, okay, let's drop the word belief and make this a little easier. Either you are convinced that a god exists or you are not convinced. Why would the default position be I am convinced? Because becoming convinced is the result of, or being convinced is a result of becoming convinced. So it should never be the default position to just accept something. Now, the default position should be to say, I don't yet accept that. I need to be convinced. So then you would have to show what convinced you, right?
Yeah, like exactly. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Guaranteed.
I don't know. So in terms of religion, what's it called? I don't know. Our criteria is that, you know, I know it doesn't fit your criteria. We accept the revelation by default instead of kind of needing, I don't want to say you need empirical evidence, but we just believe it by default. We believe in the revelation instead of...
You don't believe things by default, though. An example I've used for the burden of proof in the past is if you tell me you get a dog, then I don't by default believe that you've gotten a dog. But when you tell me you've gotten a dog, because it's such a mundane claim, I'm probably just going to accept it. But that's still not the default position. I have become convinced that you have a dog through the evidence of you having told me that you got a dog. But when it comes to the God claim, the claim is just so extremely, it's just such an extraordinary claim that the idea of just accepting it because somebody said it, it just doesn't, I need more than just you said there's a God, therefore I'm going to believe you by default. That's not the default position. Does that make sense?
I'm a layman, I don't know that much, but for example, in epistemology, because I've heard this from Muslims who are more educated than me, they say, for example, philosophers, they went through epistemology and they tried to find the best criteria of how to get to reliable knowledge. And they say that, for Muslims, our epistemology is it's grounded in the revelation. We get all our principles, all that from the religion itself.
How do you know that the revelation is an accurate revelation? There are Christians that receive direct revelation from God, if they're to be believed. There are Hindus that have had direct revelation from various Hindu gods, if they're to be believed. How is a non-believer like me supposed to figure out which one of these revelations is actually the right revelation? They're all claiming to have received direct revelation from God or a God. So how am I supposed to parse it out? I need more than just somebody saying they've had a revelation. Now, I understand, I know a little bit about Islam. My understanding is that the idea is that God will choose who he wants to be Muslims, and we don't really get a choice in the matter. So if I don't believe, that's just because Allah hasn't given me the revelation yet. I kind of understand that, but at the same time, if you could just try and put yourself in my shoes for a moment, how am I supposed to figure out which God is supposed to be the real God when they talk to so many different people in so many different ways?
I understand, honestly, what you're saying, it makes sense, that, the epistemology of, having, methods are the best to get to reliable knowledge. If you use it from, a critical thinking perspective, it makes sense that, there's all these different claims and gods and whatnot. But
hang on, Muhammad. I'm not trying to beat up on you, and I get it. You're nervous. You're new to some of this, but we're tossing around the word epistemology left and right when I'm not even sure we're necessarily talking about the same thing. But all I was asking about was how we go about establishing the default position. So let's say, for example, there are two claims: Allah is real, Allah is not real. Only one of those two claims can be true, and should we believe either of them the instant we hear it, without any other consideration? Should one of those be the default position?
I don't know. Like,
so it's a yes or no question, and I'll tell you the answer is no. And we should neither believe the claim Allah is real, nor should we believe the claim Allah is not real by default. No claim should just be accepted by default. Everything needs some sort of evidential foundation. This is where why we're talking about epistemology is how do you know what you know? Now, what is my default position on God or Allah? Well, my default position is I am not convinced that Allah is real. I'm also not convinced that Allah is not real. Both of those claims would require some convincing and some evidence. As we begin looking at things, you can then build a case for accepting that Allah is real. You can also build a case for accepting that Allah is not real. This is what Vice Rhino was doing the other day by making a case for why it is, I'm going to go ahead and kind of stretch it a bit and say it's not rational to believe in a particular God, or why he specifically does not believe in a particular God, and why he specifically believes this God does not exist. But for any given claim, the default position should not be to accept it. It should be to say, I've been presented with a claim. I will accept it when there is sufficient reason to accept it, right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I didn't know like that's how your position was. Yeah, that's like honestly, that's like super logical. Sorry.
I'll just go with just logical, but cool. So here's the thing. Yeah,
logic with a cape.
This is why I objected right off the bat, because you said that you believe in Allah by default, and I think that. I don't think that's what you meant. I think that what you mean is you believe, and you may not necessarily be able to express exactly what convinced you, but you became convinced at some point. And so I'm wondering what it is that did convince you, and whether you think it should convince anybody else.
The main reason why I called is because you guys, I'm not like trying to say like, oh yeah, this is like, I want to convince you guys, you know, like, honestly, I want you guys to like, teach me, you know, like tell me if these reasons are convincing. So, there's basically like prophecies, like claimed by this man named Muhammad. And he makes predictions about the future that, came true. And
are any of them actually specific enough to be like conclusively demonstrated to have either come true or not? Because in my experience, I don't know the Quran as well as I know the Bible, but the Bible, for instance, has a whole lot of things that people say are prophetic and these prophecies came true. But when you actually read the prophecy, it's so vague that it just like anything could be spun to be a fulfillment of that prophecy. So, like, do you have an example of a specific prophecy?
That'd be the best thing. If you can just let's not go down 25 rabbit holes. Just give us the absolute best example or one good example of a prophecy that Muhammad made that came true, and then we can talk about it.
Okay, perfect. This man, Muhammad, right, he made a claim that, and he was talking to like he's talking to the Muslims, but like the Muslims are like by and large the Arabs, because like those were his companions at that time when he was still alive. So he said, basically that there will be a race that will be dominant or like over you and basically like take over the caliphate. Like they will be dominant over you. And those were the Turks. And it could be proven because like this wasn't written like after like the prophecy was fulfilled, because the hadith sciences, they have like, I honestly, I'm not like a scholar in it, so I don't know it that good, but there's like, they have criteria.
Muhammad, I got to stop you. Sure. I got to stop you here because I don't think you're ready for this. And I'd like for you to call back some other time, because all we want is one prophecy, and we need to know specifically what was said, when it was said, and how we know that it came to fulfillment. I'm going to try something without being specific about any prophecy. I'm going to pretend for a second that instead of what you just said, you said Muhammad predicted 9/11 in great detail. And I'm going to assume that that's correct. Let's assume that there's a prediction that came true. What is the best explanation for how that prediction came true? Is it this is a message from God? Is it somebody has a time machine? Is it this is something that was likely to happen? Is it we made a public prediction and a lot of people were working to make it come true? How do we determine that the fact that somebody said something and it appears to come true means they had some sort of power?
So the reason why, like, I would believe it's, like, kind of odd is because, like, it's not that likely to happen is because the Turkish race and, like, historically...
You're not listening. I wasn't asking about the thing you said because you didn't give us enough anything specific to go with. I came up with a different one. Doesn't matter what it is. The question is, somebody makes a prediction and it turns out to be right. And how do you know how they knew or if they knew? Because it's possible for someone to make a prediction and not know that it's going to come true, but just be guessing or playing the odds. I mean, I do mentalism on stage that involves making all kinds of predictions, and I'm right almost every time. Does that mean I have special powers?
There's a podcast that I listen to where every year after New Year's, they go through, they look at psychic predictions that have been made the year before to see whether or not they came true, and then they make their own predictions. And they're pretty good at, like, picking things that are likely to like, they'll make, like, three predictions, and one of them is, like, something that they know is likely going to happen. And they make it just vague enough that it kind of works. Prophecy is one of those things that it's easy to write things that look super specific that you can then figure out how to fulfill them later. And, like, unless you, unless it's, like, specifically using, like, dates and names and stuff like that, it's kind of hard to really say that any prophecy is fulfilled. And, like, that's kind of another thing, is that a lot of these old prophecies, they don't give names. And, like, how, if they have knowledge of the future, could they not just get something as basic as someone's name? But they don't do that because names are very specific things. So if they give a name, then it's obvious that, like, oh, this guy did it and he didn't actually fulfill that, or, like, he fulfilled the prophecy, but he's named the wrong thing. So clearly the prophecy was wrong.
The thing I'm worried about here, Muhammad, is that you're calling in to basically say, hey, I heard some stuff from some Muslims. I don't know the specifics, but I found it compelling. And what do I do with that? And yet you don't have the ability to tell us exactly what you heard, to give us any details to evaluate it. But at the end of the day, I'm willing to say, even if there is a prediction from Muhammad that absolutely came true, we have no way of knowing what the explanation for how he was able to make that prediction. Was it lucky? Maybe. Was it from a god? Maybe. Was it from a time machine? Maybe. Was it something that people were working to make happen? Maybe. It's just, you can't go, wow, somebody said something, this happened, therefore this is the one true prophet of the Almighty God. That is not a rational path from claim to conclusion. It's just not. And so it's absolutely useless for us to sit here and keep talking about prophecy, especially if you don't have anything specific. Does that make sense?
No, yeah. Like, of course that makes sense. Like, what you're saying, like, I don't disagree with it. It's like, the only reason it was, like, convincing for me is because, like, if you read his biography, and obviously, like, I know that not all historical accounts are, like, super accurate, but, like, he was, like, a simple man, you know, like, kind of just, like just how, like, farm people are, you know, like, he wasn't, like, he was illiterate. He didn't have, like, all this knowledge. Like, he was an educated person, you know? I
don't see the relevance.
I don't, first of all, even assuming that's true. So, first of all, you're talking about someone's life story that you can't investigate and can't verify, but it's not remotely impressive to say, oh, this is what the person was like, therefore, they were the one true prophet of Allah. That's a load of crap, because all you know, you could do this for anybody. Let's imagine that somebody else was claimed to be the one true prophet of Allah, and this person was better educated. Well, Allah saw to that. All things work according to Allah's plan. And so if you begin with this assumption that there is a God and he has a prophet, then whatever prophet other people are going to become convinced of, there's going to be a case to be made for it. But you still have all the work to do. First, prove that there is any God and any prophet from any God. You can't just begin by assuming there's a God and a prophet.
Yeah, like, it gets, like, super complex because you need, like, a bunch of criteria and stuff. And, like, yeah, like, I understand, you know, like, I wasn't, like, here to try to convince you guys, like, I'm here, like, trying to learn from you guys, you know?
I get it, and that's why I'm not beating you up. I'm not trying to beat you up over any of this. I'm just saying that what you've come with so far is not even the hopes of a beginning of being a compelling case for Muhammad being a prophet or the prophet or the preferred prophet of any God or any God existing. And so I get why you and other people become convinced by some of this stuff, because when you run up against, let's say, a Muslim that knows all of this way better than you do, somebody who's spent their life studying the history and everything else, it's a daunting prospect for you to challenge them and say, hey, hang on, how do you know that? Hey, hang on, how do you know that? And they're probably not going to answer. It can be appear to be rude and all this stuff. And so we are conditioned, all of us as human beings, to generally accept whatever people are telling us. You're doing it right now, by the way. You are listening to me and Veist, and we're making sense. And you do not yet understand everything that we've said, but you're grasping enough of it that it makes sense. And now you're going, wow, yeah, these guys are making sense. I applaud you for asking the questions. I want to caution you against going wherever the wind blows or just agreeing with whoever you listen to last. Instead, go out and do the investigation. And if you ever get to a point with any of this where you recognize that you don't understand something and that you probably can't understand something right now, like I have no way of understanding if somebody's right about quantum mechanics. I just don't. And if I spend a long time studying it, I might be able to get there. But if that's the case, like if you don't have a good enough understanding of history, of Muhammad, of Islam, then you should not believe it. It is a mistake to believe something that you don't understand. It is going back to Stevie Wonder and the song Superstition. When you believe in things that you don't understand and you suffer, superstition ain't the way. And religion is superstition on steroids.
Yeah, like honestly, like if I'll be honest, like the thing that like I was kind of like woe about was when they said, for example, like the hadith, like these sayings of Muhammad that, you know, the Turks will like be dominant over you and they'll take the caliphate, basically, that they said that these things were compiled centuries before the actual event took place. So like that's why I was like, okay. Oh, man.
And Jews say the same thing about prophecies regarding the Temple Mount and Jerusalem. And Christians say the same thing with regard to prophecies that, or things that they view as prophecies with regard to Jesus being the one true Messiah. People make all kinds of claims about predictions. The thing is, how do you tell which ones are right? And even if you did, this is the easy thing. Say, okay, here's a prediction, and it definitely came true. Now, the next question is, how was that prediction made? Was it lucky? You know, all those questions I asked earlier. But I tell you what, though, Muhammad, call us back sometime. Do some more thinking about it. Do some more investigating. If you find a better argument or if you find a case for prophecy, by all means, let us know, you know, how it's going. And we'll always do our best to answer it. But I got to move on to some other callers. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Yeah, thanks for calling.
That's rough. And I just I don't what is your background with religion? Because for whatever reason, that's something you and I don't think we've ever discussed.
I was raised in a very liberal Christian church. It was actually the first church in Canada to perform gay weddings. But I kind of self-fundamentalized because I thought about it, it was kind of like, well, God is the all-powerful God of the universe. If he has a message for us and it's the Bible, then like, why should we be questioning the Bible? So I took my liberal background and self-fundamentalized. And then I ended up in a Christian high school that it was the Brethren in Christ, which is kind of semi-fundamentalist. Like, I don't think they officially have positions on evolution stuff, but a lot of my teachers were anti-evolution. And then I eventually as I started noticing like little detail, like minor details that just didn't quite seem right in the Bible. And then that started me down a path of doubt that had me sit down and actually try and read the Bible. And by the book of Joshua, I was an atheist.
Yeah. Most people who are listening to this are going to know the bulk of my story, which is that I was brought up primarily Southern Baptist, occasionally going to Pentecostal services for good music like Petra and Carmen, but primarily Southern Baptist fundamentalist. And I went kind of the opposite direction in that I gradually became more liberal. But the thing was, I did it knowing I didn't have a leg to stand on. I did it knowing that I was imposing my own views over what the Bible actually said. as repugnant as, let's say, Westboro Baptist Church is, their views are biblical. Yeah. When the Bible says, you know, hey, you can debate about what's to be taken literally and what's not with regard to maybe the Garden of Eden or the process by people might go through to try to date the earth. But when the Bible says, if man lies with a man as he lies with a woman, they've committed an abomination or deserving of death. That's not hyperbole. It's not a metaphor. I mean, it's also not an instruction for you to necessarily kill them. I recognize saying they're deserving of death isn't, you know, that's how my gay friendly churches say, well, you know, that's up to God whether or not put us to death, not human beings. Human beings are supposed to forgive. But I saw a comment just the other day was from, I don't want to beat anybody up because there's lots of stuff here, but Christianity is not about forgiveness. Christianity is not about humans forgiving humans. Christianity is about God forgiving humans. God chooses who he's going to forgive. Well, there's the whole process of the discipline of exploring soteriology to figure out what's required for salvation, who's going to be saved, et cetera. But at the end of the day, you can forgive people all day long and go straight to hell under almost every model of Christianity. And similarly, you can go to heaven without ever forgiving anybody. Oddly, I think that from my perspective as a former Southern Baptist, if you were living a Christ life, like you would be forgiving, but that's not the key behind it. This conversation was about capital punishment. And it was like, how could Christians be in favor of capital punishment? And I'm like, because the Bible is and God is. I mean, it's just there, straightforward, but it's so hard. And I appreciate Muhammad calling and asking the questions. Here's something that you can ask yourself, Muhammad, and everybody else as well who may be struggling with this. If there is a God, why is he letting you struggle so? If there is a God who is the one true ruler of the universe, who wants you to know that he exists, whether he's Yahweh, Allah, whoever, why is he letting you struggle? Why isn't he giving you the information? If you are sincerely seeking God and open to the experience, why aren't you getting the experience? Why aren't any of us? Why is it that all I ever hear about is nothing from a God and everything about a God? I hear men constantly telling me what they think about a God, but there's thousands of denominations just within Christianity, and there's a variety of denominations within Islam and Hinduism, and there's so many different views. Isn't it, if there was a God, wouldn't it be grossly immoral for that God to not clear this up, to let people just sit around and flounder? And worse,
what if people kill each other over which God is the right God?
What if he's actually playing favorites, which is what some of them know? Like, I come only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Oh, I'm not going to reveal myself to you or you or you, but I'll let you know and I'll let you know and let you know. That's not the God that most people seem to believe in. For those of you who do believe in it and you think that you're one of those chosen few, cool. Congratulations. You're just exactly as special as you think you are. All right. We've got a bunch of other calls to try to get to today. And maybe we'll get an answer, because Jeremiah in Arizona has been waiting for a while to tell us about why he believes in a God. So welcome, Jeremiah. You're on with Vice Rhino and Matt.
Hello.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. Who was the person who was just finished speaking prior to you coming on? Was that Matt?
This is Matt speaking right now, so if this is the voice you heard, then yes.
Okay, you were talking about religion, how you were in religion in Canada?
No, oh, that's I was, me. No, Vice Rhino was in Canada.
Vice Rhino, yeah. I live in Canada, and we have some fairly liberal churches here.
I was not following who was who. Okay, so you mentioned a lot of things about religion, and I guess the best thing to do would be give you a little bit about my background. I was raised a Catholic. When I got to college, I threw away religion because I couldn't stand it. And when I retired and got myself an iPad and internet, I started looking into it. And I kind of wanted to find God. And after that, I decided, well, I'm going to have to go to church to do that. So I went to many, many churches, probably about 17.
Can I ask why you would have to go to a building in order to find an omnipresent being?
That is an absolutely good question, and it took me 4 years to realize it was a mistake.
Well, can I ask another question real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
You said that you got to a point where you kind of wanted to find God. If you begin with the notion that there's a God for you to find, isn't that biasing your search?
Yes, probably the bias came from my upbringing, I'm assuming.
Okay, I just want to be clear.
Bias was. And also that bias probably is what led me to Christian churches instead of like a Muslim church or some other kind of church. Right? Yep. So I went to, like I said, about 17 various Christian churches in numerous states because I travel quite a bit. So, and I learned, like you said, my wife and I both, we like at this point, after many years out of churches now, it's like, whoa, what an eye-opener. That's the place to go if you don't want to find God. I mean, they've got everything upside down. I have to agree with you guys completely. Religion screwed up the world.
Well, if you agreed with us completely, we wouldn't have much to discuss because we're atheists.
I agree with you completely about religion. That's a question I'd like to ask. Yeah, you.
See, the thing is, I'm not just an a religionist. I'm an atheist. Okay. I do not believe that there's a God. So, if we can, tell us what God you believe in and why, because that's going to be the way to move forward.
Well, you answered my question, so I don't have to even ask that. So that's very good, because I'm anti-religion, but not anti-God. I'm a religion, but not a God, okay? I'm theist.
Okay. I'm aware. That's why I was wanting you to tell me which God you believe in and why.
Yeah, and I found God after I left the churches, because I used to try to read the Bible and try to figure out what things meant, and I'd bookmark, what are they called, apologetics. You know, and different commentators on religion. And I could find a commentator that would agree with any thought I came up with. And if I found another commentator that didn't, I'd just discount him. Just believe the one that believed what I believed. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, we still
want to know what God you do believe in.
What God do you believe in and why? I don't need all the backstory about all the gods you figured out weren't real. I got those covered.
And all that stuff didn't work. So I got my concepts of God from the Bible. I started reading it, and I started realizing that if I'm trying to interpret it on my own, I can't do it. So I had to say, I'm wrong. I can't figure it out. At that point, the Bible became pretty clear. And then I read some verses that said, the Lord will open your eyes once you give up yourself. And I only found that long afterwards. And I looked back and said, that must have been what happened. I understood an overarching theme of the Bible, what I call the big picture. And that big picture is completely encapsulated in the Bible verse where Jesus says, love God with all your heart.
Okay, so do you believe in the God of the Bible?
That's where I got my God from, was the Bible. So I'm going to tell you what my God is.
Okay.
Right now. God, and you have shown me my God since I've been listening to the phone conversation. You are kind and very wonderful and honest to the people you talk to on this station. And my God is honesty.
Okay, but that's not the God of the Bible, though. Not if you read the Bible.
But that's my God, and that's the God I got of the Bible, and that is my God. And you said a number of things.
Okay, read Deuteronomy 28 sometime and tell me that's a loving God. One of the punishments that he proclaims for Israel if they disobey him is that you will become betrothed to a woman, and then someone else will rape her. So, is that a loving God that will have your fiance raped as a punishment for you?
Okay, could I comment?
Yeah.
Okay. I cannot specifically comment on one verse. I actually could, but it would be futile.
So you're just going to cherry pick that. So God is the God that you decided on without the Bible, and then the parts of the Bible that you agree with, you say that's the God that you believe in, but then you discard the ones you don't.
Jeremiah, you had an epiphany, but it's flawed. You at some point realized, and you said this, that you couldn't interpret and understand the Bible on your own. And then later you found a verse that says, when you love God, you know, the Bible will be made clear. And then afterwards you said, you concluded, that's what must have happened. Well, I'm happy to inform you actually that when you reach the conclusion, that's what must have happened, that is a logical fallacy on your part. You cannot conclude that your new understanding is in fact a correct understanding from God. That is a fallacy. So what you need to do is show how. So I need to know what your God is, because it's not the God of the Bible. Because if your God, the only thing you've defined about your God is that he's kind and wonderful and honest. But the God of the Bible is not necessarily kind and wonderful and honest, doesn't care about equality, is fine with slavery, endorses slavery, doesn't have men and women being equal, does not provide evidence for his existence, left you to flounder this whole time. You have invented a God out of whole cloth based on your own understanding of the Bible. How do you prove that God is real?
I get to start now.
I asked a question. Normally after a question, that's your time to respond.
Okay. Because I was trying to respond to the other questions that you were bringing up, because someone mentioned cherry picking verses. I don't do that because I just picked one to show you the overarching theme that I saw in the entire.
And I showed you a verse that disagrees with that overarching theme. How do you reconcile the two?
Okay, I can reconcile that. You chose a verse that specifically condemns something and gives some kind of punishment, I believe.
No, God is proclaiming what he is going to do to Israel for disobeying him. It's a whole long list. I just picked one thing out of it. It is a long list of horrible, horrible, horrible things that he is going to do to the nation of Israel for disobeying him. There's things like force you to eat your children. There's send you back to Egypt to be slaves. He actually, the last verse of that chapter says that I know I promised you that I would never send you back to Egypt to be slaves, but I'm going to send you back to Egypt to be slaves. So right there, God doesn't keep his promises. He says so himself. I can't read that chapter and come away with a picture of a loving God. And like, yeah, you can show me all the verses you want that say God is love. God loves people. God wants you to love your neighbor. You can show me all those verses, but that doesn't square with a laundry list of things that he's going to do that are heinous, immoral things that he is saying that he is going to do. This isn't him telling other people what is just happening. This is him saying, I am going to do this.
Yes, I can't disagree with you on all those things. But in my opinion, those things are coming from a misinterpretation of the Bible.
No.
It says it flat out.
Set all of that aside, because now you're saying that God reveals the Bible to you, that you couldn't understand it on your own, but you're telling us that everything else that we're going to bring up that doesn't fit your narrative is a misinterpretation of the Bible. I'm going to ask this one time, and we're going to try it, and then we're going to move on. Prove that your God exists.
Okay. If my God is honesty, honesty exists.
No, honesty does not exist. Honesty is an abstract concept that evaluates whether or not a particular statement is accurate with respect to reality. You don't get to say that your God is an abstract concept. I mean, you can say that, but your God is now useless, and it's not the God of the Bible, and that is one of the most dishonest attempts to define a God into existence. It's absolute pablum garbage.
Okay.
See, if you're going to demonstrate that a God exists, you can't just say my God is honesty and honesty exists, because first of all, honesty does not exist as a thing. Honesty is an abstract concept. You might as well have said God is love and love exists. Well, kudos to you. That's
God
not the God of the Bible.
Piece of foam, and this piece of foam exists.
Yep.
My God is
cup
more,
here that changes colors. This cup changes colors based on temperatures. Is infinitely more powerful and impressive than any God you've proposed and any God anybody else has proposed. If you're going to demonstrate that something exists, you can't just do the, well, my God is this, and that abstract concept exists. That's cheating. That's not a defense of God. That's playing around with words, and it's an admission of defeat. What did God do in the Bible to prove to Pharaoh that he was real? Did he have Moses show up and say, hey, my God is a God of honesty and honesty exists? Is that what God did with Moses to Pharaoh?
Did those things actually happen? Are they accurate?
No, I don't think any of these things happened. I don't think it's historically accurate, but I was asking a question because you're the one advocating for the God of the Bible. In the Bible, what did God do to have Moses show Pharaoh he was real? Did he pull some wordplay bullshit out, or did he do some magic tricks and plagues?
Well, I don't believe those things were accurately historical or historical.
Wow. So I tell you what, Jeremiah, I'm just going to let you go because here's why. Okay. It doesn't matter whether or not you think those things are historical. I don't think they're historical either. What I'm talking about is not what actually happened in the Bible. I'm talking about how to go about demonstrating that a God exists. If you had come with something like magic, okay, that'd be impressive. If you had come with something like evidence, that would be impressive. But when you come with my God is honesty and honesty exists, now I know you are not taking this seriously. And I took it seriously.
Let me ask you a question. You said something about magic. What does that mean exactly?
So I would argue that turning a stick into a snake and a plague and those things, I label those magics, miracles that go beyond the natural. Yeah, that's kind of what we're talking about.
Uh-huh. That's correct. And those things happened in the Bible, didn't they?
There's the story. The stories are there. I don't think they happened. You don't think they happened.
I don't. But let's say they did happen. What are the what does the Bible continue to say happened after they happened?
I don't. So why are it's like you didn't listen to a thing I said. It's your job to defend. It's your job to defend the God that you believe in. And I'm telling you, wordplay isn't going to do it. Do you have any evidence for your God? Do you have any evidence for your God?
Things to think about.
Do you have? I don't need you to give me shit to think about. I think all the time. I've thought through this stuff vastly more than you have. Do you have evidence for your God?
Yes.
What is it?
It's something you can't see because you don't know me. If you knew me 4 years ago and you knew me now, you would
Jeremiah, do you have evidence that you can present to any other human being? Do you have evidence that you can present to us that demonstrates the truth of the proposition that your God exists? Yes or no?
You want evidence of a spiritual being.
That was a yes or no question. Do you have evidence that you can present to us that confirms the existence of your God?
Evidence you want? No.
Bye. Thanks for wasting my time. God is honesty, and honesty is real, and I don't have any evidence. Yeah, I would be able to give you evidence, but you don't know me, and you don't know the person I was 4 years ago. You know how many times have you, Vice, heard this crap of, I used to be a different person, and God changed me?
Fairly frequently, but my question, like, I might be impressed if the person you were 4 years ago was missing a limb, and you have documentation of that, and now you have all your limbs.
That would be really, I wouldn't have an explanation for it. It probably wouldn't be enough to convince me that God exists, but it'd be a good start.
It'd be a step in the right direction for sure.
Sure. All right. So we got Mike in, is it Michigan, who has supposedly direct falsification of atheism, which isn't possible since atheism isn't a proposition. But come on, Mike, tell us what you got.
So if non-existence does not exist, then God's existence is necessary. But if non-existence exists, then God's non-existence is identical to existence. Either way, the entire ontological underpinnings of your entire worldview collapse into reductio ad absurdum. You're as equally baseless in all your knowledge claims as you are in all of your ignorance.
Are you happy that you got all that out before I hung up on you? Because your attitude is just shocking.
Bye.
See, here's the thing. That would be true if atheism was the assertion that no gods exist. And actually, that wouldn't be enough because what you were talking about was naturalism. And naturalism may or may not be true. I'm a methodological naturalist in that I can only assume naturalism until somebody demonstrates something supernatural. But it's not a requirement for my atheism. My atheism is predicated on the fact that you, Mike, like the past callers and everybody that I've engaged with in over 500 episodes on this show and countless debates, have failed to demonstrate and present a convincing case for their God. And so when you call in to say something like, well,
I would have had to write the whole thing down and like trace it out and everything. Like I didn't follow it at all.
Even if philosophical naturalism weren't true, that wouldn't prove a God or some other God. All it would prove is that there's some sort of supernatural realm. And you don't get to prove the supernatural realm by asserting the impossibility of the contrary. You have to actually demonstrate the impossibility of the contrary. And so Mike just sat there. You could hear it. He'd been sitting there waiting. He's been ready to dig into me. Let me get the whole thing out because your worldview is crap, is basically what that was. And okay.
You know what? I'm impressed that he was able to get through it without stumbling over his words, because I would have had to practice that for a bit before getting it all out.
But hey, we got other people here. So we have someone. Whoops, I clicked to talk. It's not. There we go. We have someone going by the name of Skeptic here, wants to talk about why he believes in God. So welcome, Skeptic.
Yeah, your question is why I believe in God, right?
Well, yep. I would like to know what God you believe in and why, but yes.
On the video. Well, I believe in Jesus Christ, Father, Son, Holy Spirit.
Okay well, that's... Sure. Why?
Because there's a giant snake circling the earth and atheists go inside of there.
Nice.
So you can.
Nice. There's a giant snake circling the earth and atheists go inside of it. Congratulations on your Baba Booey. Well done. I'm glad we kept you on hold for nearly an hour so that you could.
Was it worth it?
Yeah. If you manage to get a clip out. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. How dare you call in and break all our show? Is this the angry face that you imagined you were going to get? Oh, I'm really going to stick it to those atheists when really you just made yourself look like a complete goober again, because you've done that before.
Yeah, I thought that sounded familiar.
But we have MJ in New York. Thank you so much for calling. You wanted to introduce a case for Judaism and an evidence for God. So awesome. Thanks.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I can. I have evidence for Judaism. The thing with it is that there are many pieces of evidence for Judaism, and one piece of evidence alone is not going to prove it. So, like, if you have an email address in which I can send you the information, like, I cannot prove it to you in just one
MJ
phone call.
MJ, did you just call the show and talk to the call screeners and sit there on hold just so you could get the email address that's publicly available? How'd you find the phone number and not the email address? It's tv@atheist-community.org. But the whole point is this is a call-in show. Are you going to present your case or not?
I want to present the case, by. So where can I find the email address again?
Never mind. Click rewind. I don't sit here and spend my time just to tell you what email address you can do eventually. This is a call-in show where you were supposed to call in. Go rewind and you can find the address that I already gave you. All right. Daniel in Washington. How you doing? And welcome to the show. You're on with Vice Rhino and Matt.
Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay. Hello? I'm sorry. It says Washington on here. So.
That's so Portland. How you doing?
Well, you're the only caller on hold right now, so I'm wondering if there was a problem with call-in studio or whatever, but that's all right, because I'm happy to talk to you. What do you got for us?
Well, I just got a case. Well, my case is that the Gospels have been most likely written earlier than 50 years after Jesus' death. And
the earliest one is about 30 years after, so that would be earlier than 50, I suppose.
Yes, and the way I look at it is the Book of Acts. We don't know who wrote it. We don't know who wrote the Gospels.
No.
Whether it was Mark Luke. Yeah, I agree with that. There's no author written. But if we go forward to 70 AD, when Jerusalem was...
When the temple was destroyed and Jerusalem was besieged.
There was siege. When Paul was executed, we don't have any of that information in the Book of Acts. But on the other hand, we have information when Jews were exterminated from Rome. We have information when there was a great famine. We know
Daniel?
We have information.
Okay, what's the point?
Daniel, I'm confused. So, I don't really have that much of a position on when Gospels were written. I tend to go with what the bulk of Christian scholars say. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite websites, which discusses this stuff, is not an atheist website at all. It's earlychristianwritings.com. And so, if you pull up earlychristianwritings.com right now, are you trying to say that you think the dates there are wrong?
Who? Can you repeat the name?
It's earlychristianwritings.com.
Yes.
Like, are you calling in to disagree with the scholarly consensus about the dates of the various gospels?
Yeah, I disagree.
Okay.
Okay. So what is your reason?
My position is.
Hang on.
Well.
No. Hang on. Listen. Why would you call an atheist show that has no historians or New Testament scholars on it to tell us that you disagree with Christians about when the gospel was written? You disagree with the bulk of scholarship. Why on earth would you call to tell us that you don't agree with the bulk of the best scholarship? What are we supposed to do about it? And what difference does it make?
Yeah, I'm going to get to my point. If we establish that gospel was written, let's say, 45, first gospel of Mark, 45, that's 10 years after Jesus' death. You can go or you can come and see those people that have.
Okay, but no, like there are no serious scholars that think that Mark was written that early. So I'm not sure.
You might as well be saying if we had Jesus's own handwriting and DNA, we would have no more questions left. If frogs had wings, they wouldn't bump their ass a hopping. If I asked you what Yes, I agree with you. Well, I don't actually agree with you because I think a decade is still a long time, and a decade is a longer time back in first century, you know, Judea, where you don't, a decade's different now. And yet a decade would be a long time to try to ask somebody to go back. I couldn't tell you what I did on this show 10 years ago, let alone what I did in life 10 years ago. But you're saying that you reject the bulk of scholarship on the dating. I don't care. Who the hell are you, and what evidence do you have, and what difference does it make? Why aren't you taking this to the scholars? Why are you calling an atheist show to tell us how you don't agree with the bulk of scholarship on the dating of the Gospels? What the hell are we supposed to do about it? I genuinely don't give a fuck.
Sir, with all due respect, I just wanted to share my, like, I go off Warner Wallace. He's a detective. He has been doing...
And he's not a scholar, and he holds a minority.
Why won't you answer my question? Why are you calling us?
Well, my apologies. If that doesn't persuade you in any way, I called you because I'm trying to be a good Christian, sir. And
are you really? Are you trying to be a good Christian by saying that you reject the bulk of Christian scholarship on dating? Is it a good Christian thing to do for you to reject the bulk of scholarship and to call into atheists? What is a good Christian? What about that makes you a good Christian, Daniel?
I do work.
Like Gary Habermas, who is a Christian scholar, disagrees with you. He's one of the fundamentalists. Well, maybe not fundamentalists, but like he holds a lot of positions that secular scholarship would reject, but he disagrees with you about the authorship of, like, when the books were written. Now, I find the subject fascinating personally. I would be happy to talk to you about it at some point, but like this isn't really the purpose of this show. I would recommend maybe reading Bart Ehrman's book, Lost Christianities. And he talks about how there is evidence of a bazillion different Christian sects who believed all sorts of different things that were so different from each other that they would make a Catholic and a Protestant look like the same denomination by comparison. And all of these sects existed before any of the Gospels were written. Like a lot of the writing of the New Testament is Paul talking about how you can't believe all these different Christians that are teaching things that I'm not teaching. Like that's in the New Testament. And these are people that existed like before any of the Gospels were written.
It
doesn't matter how early you get it. It's still later than Paul. And there were still a bazillion other Christian sects.
Yeah. When I say I don't give a fuck, I'm genuinely curious and interested in the subject, which is why I'm able to produce websites with information off the top of my head, like earlychristianwritings.com. My question was specifically for Daniel. What the hell is it that you think makes you a good Christian to call into an atheist show to say you don't agree with the dating and you think it's earlier than any good scholar on the planet? What difference does that make? Because let's say I granted you, Daniel. Let's say I'm willing to say all four Gospels were written 3 days after the events. Let's say I'm willing to grant that. Does that prove any of it's true?
But we can make inference.
Does that prove any of it's true?
I said to the screener, I am inferring.
Sir, I don't give a shit about inference. That's another thing. Why would you think that would be a good thing?
And you can hang up on me, sir, then. You can hang up and we can end this call. This is not going to go anywhere.
Okay, I did. See, I said to the screener, I was making an inference. Well, what you really mean is you have an idea that is not consistent with the best scholarship. Great. As an atheist, I'd like to make sure that the show is staying close to the best scholarship that I can. Because if I start doing a show where I start using dates that are ridiculous, you know, let's assume that I do the same thing Daniel does, but I go the other direction. So instead of moving Mark from around 70 to 15, I move him from 70 to 130. And then I try to claim nobody could remember stuff for that long and they're all dead and everything else. That would be a dishonest argument against Christianity, just as your argument, Daniel, is a dishonest argument in favor of it. Because at the end of the day, even if all of it was written 3 days later, that doesn't mean it's true. That's independent of whether we have good reason to think it's true.
Right.
All right. Last call for today. We have Bill in Colorado. Thank you so much for calling in, Bill. I appreciate it. How can we help you? I guess you've got, are you another Jesus believer who's going to tell us why?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
thank
you. I wanted to check in. I know I used to be an atheist, but I came back to Jesus, mainly to Christianity, because of Jesus alone. And I understand as a skeptic, you have to have a reason for it. So the reason is...
I'm sorry. Prophecy. Bill, I promise I'm not trying to interrupt you. I just didn't hear what you said. You said you came back to Jesus because what?
Because of Jesus and his claims. So oh, okay. That reason. You have to have a reason for it, because as a skeptic, you're right. I mean, the Bible basically says we're dirt. And if you want to believe that we're more than dirt, you got to have a good reason. And the reason I have is the promise of Abraham and Isaac. It's a prediction, and I understand that it's going to have some selection bias, but I do think it's valid to consider why there's 2 billion plus people who refer.
Why do we need a promise through ancient Hebrews to be more than dirt? Like, why can't we be more than dirt because we are conscious beings who have experiences and emotions and empathy?
Because of Darwin. If you're going to claim we're going to be
have to do with Iran
and believe in Darwin.
That's Darwin back there.
Yeah, so what's
he doing to stop me from being...
You believe in Jesus because there's got to be some reason why there's a couple billion Christians, but why are there 1.8 billion Muslims?
They're all referring back to Abraham, and that's what the promise said, both Ishmael. So you can say they're all claiming that, and I totally agree with that. But there are several billion people, and we're still having this discussion 2,000 years later regarding Jesus.
Yeah, but back in, like, it wasn't all that long ago that people believed the Earth was the center of the universe. And the majority of people at the time believed that.
Yeah.
Why should we go with the majority just because it's the majority? That's not a good reason to make a decision.
And if Christianity's popularity falls to the point where non-belief is the majority, does that mean that we're right?
No, I totally agree. Yeah, majority.
Well, no. You can't say you totally agree because you just basically said that you became a Christian again because it's popular.
I said I considered it again because it's a claim that's made by a tiny little people that came true. And
well, what's the claim? What's the claim that was made by a tiny little people that came true?
The claim to Abraham is that you and your descendants would eventually become as numerous as grains in the sand, and that your people would be a light unto the world.
No, people are not as numerous as grains of sand, and Jews are the descendants of Abraham, and they're definitely not as numerous as the grains of sand.
It also, a part of that promise is that they would become greater than the stars of heaven. That, like, no matter what you can say about the grains of sand, for sure that hasn't happened with the stars of heaven. Like,
well, that's only if you're going to interpret everything else. And I am not someone who believes that the Bible is the inherent dictated word of God. I believe.
So then why should we make, like, live our lives around a book that you don't think is the inerrant word of God? And, like, why should we trust this promise but not something else? Like, why are there bits and pieces that you get to pick and choose?
Well, you do have to, you pick and choose based, and you have to minimize the claims, and that's, Jesus is saying, I'm a spiritual solution to a material problem, and you either accept it or reject it. And that's exactly what Jesus said.
Okay, so why should anybody accept it? Because I have no evidence that Jesus ever said anything, let alone I don't have evidence that anything Jesus said was true.
You accept the inspired word the way it is, and then you look at it and say whether it makes sense or not.
No.
The way it is, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And do you care whether or not it's true? Because why don't you accept other things that other people said from other religions?
Mainly because of the claim that, again, for me, it's through Darwin, because...
What the hell does Darwin have to do?
How did Darwin prove Christianity and disprove all the other religions? Like,
because if you believe in Darwin, and I actually accept it totally, then the world is limited.
No, Bill, what the fuck do you mean, believe in Darwin? I don't believe in Darwin.
Do you believe that his theory is accurate?
Do I accept the science?
Not the version that he presented.
Do I accept the science that the theory of evolution by means of natural selection is the most accurate model to explain biodiversity on the planet? Yes, I do.
But the way Darwin presented it was a very limited, rudimentary version of it, because like he's not some prophet of evolutionism. This isn't a religion where Darwin is our savior or whatever. It's like he was just a guy that made a discovery, and we have built upon this discovery. So like, right. Who cares what Darwin believed? Darwin believed that cells were a gelatinous blob that released their, like, he didn't even know what genetic material was, but like his whole idea about the mechanism behind how traits are passed on between parents and their children was completely wrong. And we don't teach that method in schools because it's completely wrong. So like, who cares about Darwin? Darwin has nothing to do with everything. If you have a problem with evolution by natural selection, talking about Darwin this and Darwin that, it doesn't matter. He was just the first guy to write the book about it. And it, like, not even all the ideas were originally his. He was building on other people, as is so often the case in science.
But I still don't know what this has to do with Jesus. So get us there, Bill. Bring us home.
Good. I think Jesus, Darwin is a materialist theory, and you could, and evolution is based on, it has to be totally materialist, natural.
No, it doesn't.
Bill.
Talk to Francis Collins sometime.
Yeah, you do realize that Catholics accept evolution and that many Protestants accept evolution, including the former head of the Human Genome Project that Weiss just mentioned, Francis Collins. So are you saying that those people aren't real believers?
Like, Francis Collins runs a website dedicated to harmonizing the Bible with science because he believes in the Bible.
But in any case, if your reason for believing in Jesus is because you don't believe evolution, then why should anybody pay any attention to you? Because clearly you don't understand and don't care about science or the truth.
I do believe in evolution. That's why I believe in Jesus. It's exactly the opposite of what you just said.
So why are you bringing up Darwin then? I don't understand what your goal is here.
The goal is to say that Jesus made a statement that if there are two realities in this world, one is spiritual, one is natural. You either believe it or you don't.
And okay, I don't, and I'm done wasting time with this. Goodbye. You either believe it or you don't. Well, congratulations. I've only been doing a show, 500 episodes of a show for over 16 years, hoping that one of you would come in and actually defend something with something stronger than you either believe it or you don't. I mean, my apologies to Vice Rhino, because I genuinely hoped we were going to get somewhere. I didn't think we were going to get to God, but I thought we were going to get to like a cogent argument, or somebody presenting something other than just, you either believe it or you don't. Well, thank you for your tautology. I don't get it.
So many of those calls had the potential to go to interesting places.
Yes. It was like, okay, so joke, and some people will not think this is as funny as other, but my friend Seth the other day posted a picture of him, his sidewalk, and talked about how much he loved a good edging, and
he
didn't understand the alternate meaning of that, and so that became a lot of fun.
On purpose.
This entire episode was a bad edging, because every single call it was like, we're getting, now that's not completely true. When we had the nice young Muslim guy on here and some others, but anybody who was calling in to present evidence of God, it's like, oh, they're on the verge. They're either on the verge of presenting something we can use, or they're on the verge of maybe answering the question they were asked, or they're on the verge of anything, and they never get there. This was like, I'm wholly unsatisfied.
Well, it was a pleasure edging with you, Matt.
Thank you. I enjoyed edging with you too, Vice. And we'll get you back on. Tell everybody where they can find you real quick, and then I'll sign us out of here.
I'm on Twitter at Vice Rhino, YouTube channel Vice Rhino. They've got my Linktree link up there. All the relevant links are there. Got podcast, Patreon, all that stuff. I'm easy to find. You type Vice Rhino into Google, you'll find something about me.
On that note, I want to thank everybody, first of all, for tuning in, and for the people who called. Yes, including the people that I wound up hanging up on or whatever else. Call back again, formulate your thoughts, go back and listen to the call and figure out where you think it went wrong, and then call in and talk about where you think it went wrong so that maybe we can correct it. But most importantly, huge thank you to all the call screeners, mods, and the crew who make this show possible. Put yourselves up there on the screen. Look at them all waving and stay, except for that one guy right there, that Johnny P. Angel guy. Don't trust him. But anyway, we appreciate everybody. Click like, click subscribe, donate if you can. But by all means, spread the word and get the word out so that maybe your relatives can call in. Maybe your relatives' pastors can call in. Maybe some apologist you know can call in. Maybe even Eric Hovind could call in. And by the way, put a big thumbs up for... Iced Rhino so we can get him back on the show sometime. Take care of yourself. Be safe. We'll see you next week. Right away.